The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale! Darling camping!
We are the wild and pretty guys!
Well, they're both festive, aren't they?
We are the Festive Foreign Film Fans. Well, hey, Mark.
Hey, Bob. Good to see you.
Mark, I am so excited because tonight is our first animated film.
I was excited. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of anime, but wait till we talk about this movie.
Mark, don't be modest. I know you have like a manga, one of those giant pillows, girl, that you lay up against. You're quite the manga fan. Go ahead. You can put it out there for the world.
You got me. you fooled me and tricked me into and revealing to my true self.
But yeah, it's exciting because, you know, we're covering all the genres, you know, so tonight we're going to dabble into the animated, which is, and this is a great one to do it. But I do wonder, Mark, you know, as I think I indicated a few of the our podcasts ago, that I've been on other Christmas podcasts and I listen to Christmas podcasts. So I'm kind of used to being in Christmas all year. But how do you feel about it? I mean, is it making it any less special? I always worry about that.
Yeah. I mean, so far, I think it's made me, you know, anticipate Christmas a little bit more. I think the watching the movies, what I think is interesting is, you know, I know that during Christmas time and you watch a Christmas movie, how there's sort of this, this relaxing piece of it, right? Watching Christmas movies when it's not Christmas time, you still get the same feeling.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's, so far so good. It's making me anticipate Christmas a little bit maybe already, and it's, you know, still a few months away, but yeah, it's been good. I'm still getting that Christmas spirit as I watch these movies.
I'm so glad to hear that, because so last year I think it was the first Christmas I had kind of been doing this, and I was worried. I'm like, God, you know, by the time it comes, am I gonna be just sick of it, you know what I mean? And actually I think I was more eager for it. And, you know, as we talked about the calendar and all that, I kept thinking I wanted to do everything. And I haven't been necessarily, I've been kind of that way, right. But I was over the top and I thought, well, obviously it's not tamping down my enthusiasm at all. So it's good. I don't, because I know it's special to you. It's special to me. The last thing I want to do by talking about it in June or July is to ruin it when it comes in December, you know?
I don't think it will, because I still think the elements will be there as we get closer to the season, right? There'll be more things happening around us. There'll be the hustle and bustle that's sometimes good, sometimes bad. There still will be the grandchildren to buy presents for.
You buy grandchildren? Where do you get those from?
You know,
I think my wife wants some.
Amazon. It's usually on Thursdays, you know, after midnight. But no, we are blessed to have a 18-month-old grandson, and coming up maybe
soon
in the future,
to be, yeah,
soon to be, actually, you know, a granddaughter. But I think being around young kids again, it sort of like re-sparks some even more enthusiasm about Christmas.
You know, you raise an interesting point in terms of, you know, as we develop our podcasts and we think about different ways to present it, a delivery room, kind of, you know, both of us in our headphones talking about a Christmas movie and getting your daughter-in-law to weigh in on that. You think that'll go over? It is a time with a blessed infant.
I can't even respond to that. I mean, my daughter-in-law is very special. Both my daughter-in-laws are extremely special, very flexible. They tolerate me. I think that might be too far.
All right. Well, then, folks, hold on. We promise that at one of these podcasts, we will announce what the new grandchild. But right now, I think we can move on to our movie tonight.
We watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
Yeah, super excited. Tokyo Godfathers, released originally in 2003. Again, as Bob mentioned, it's animation. So think about the animation level in 2003 versus what we're used to today, which I actually do find the throwbacks, like to go back and say, oh, interesting. This was the way it was 20 some years ago. But let's talk a little bit about the movie. You know, there's three main characters. Toru Amore is the voice of Jin. Toru is an actor, a voice actor, and a director in Japan. And I mentioned he plays the character Jin. Yoshiaki Ongaki plays Hana, he is an actor in Japan. And then Eva Okamoto plays Mayuki, and she is a TV and movie actress in Japan. Actually has quite a few TV accomplishments in her career.
You know, I guess I should put the apology out there right now, Mark. So far, the films that I've been responsible for have been fairly straightforward, a straightforward narrative. And now you've actually had two Asian films and very complicated and, you know, involved storylines. So good luck. Here you go.
Well, let's talk about the film because I think it was a very good film, right? But let me tell you a little bit about what's happening, right? So it's Christmas Eve, right? It's Christmas Eve. And after watching a performance at a nativity scene, three homeless people, a middle-aged alcoholic man named Jin, which I think that's kind of ironic, the name.
You mean because they call you Grandpa Jin? No.
That's a whole nother podcast. A transgender woman named Hana and a runaway girl.
Wait, can I stop you there? What is so... You know, it's great in this time period right now in the United States, not in the rest of the world, but in the United States, you know, transgender people and people in drag are under attack.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to watch a movie from 20 years ago in a different culture. And she's a little bit, I mean, people will say maybe some inappropriate things, but for the most part, she's pretty much accepted.
Yeah.
He. So yeah, it's interesting.
It is very interesting. And then the last person, the main character, is a teenage runaway girl named Mayuki. So they're kind of that's their tribe, right? Mm-hmm. That's the people that they are connected together. But after the show, they go back to sort of where they sleep at night, and they discover there's an abandoned newborn baby there while they're searching through garbage. So they hear this crying, and deposit it with the unnamed baby. There's a note in there saying, hey, whoever finds this baby, please take care of them, right? Take care of this little boy. There's nothing really in there except some keys to a bus locker. We'll get to that in a little bit. But that's all they have. And so Hana, who is sort of desperate to play the mother role, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's in her core. You know, she convinces Mayuki and Jin to, like, let's keep the baby. Let's just keep it for one night. And they're like, no, let's just give it to the police.
Jin's like, we're homeless. We're destitute. Right. We live in garbage.
What are we going to do with the baby? But Hana convinces them to keep the baby one night. And so they decided to name the baby Kayoki. Right, which is translated really into a silent night, right? Literally means, the literal meaning of Kogi is actually pure child.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. So here they are. There are three homeless people living, you know, in cardboard boxes, and now they have a baby. And so as they get through that first night and they're nurturing the baby, right? Bonds are starting to be formed. And so the next day when it's time to take the baby to the police, like they agree to, Hannah has a different change of course. Like she's angry. She wants to know who would leave this baby unabandoned. I need to find out more. And so Mayuki, who really is interesting, Mayuki ends up really being the person who kind of drives everything, right? They Hana's attached in the emotion of the baby. Jin is sort of just trying to distance himself, kind of keeps reminding like, hey, we're not the right people to be doing this. But Hana, though, really decides she wants to pursue who this baby's parents are because she wants to speak to them. She's angry. How could you leave this baby alone? So, you know, from there, right, they find those keys at the bus locker. So they go to the bus locker, they open it up, and there's a bag. And inside the bag are some articles of clothing. There's some pictures, yeah. Right? And those pictures, right, and as they sort of spread them out, they see a very young couple.
Happy couple,
you know, and they're hugging each other. But they start to focus in on one particular picture, right? It's this young couple smiling, and in the background is a landmark that is notable in Tokyo that they're going to, you know, try to find. So if they can find that landmark and they find this house, maybe they can discover who is the parents. So from there, like along the way, they just have all these different interactions, right? Like, and you know, it's funny, Bobby said about maybe Jin in the beginning saying that, but you know, it's, you know, along the way, they meet a mobster.
Yes.
Right. They meet a dying man, a homeless man in the street. And they, you know, along the way, they meet the wife of someone who tried to kill the mobster. Mm-hmm. But along the way, each one of them displays an incredible amount of humanity.
Yeah.
And gentleness and caring, you know, and it's I think oftentimes we see people who maybe are in situations that, you know, we may judge as to sort of, you know, are these souls throwaway, right? Mm-hmm. What value are they adding to society? But in this story, as they have all these different interactions, as they go all over Tokyo to find these parents who've abandoned this child, they keep having opportunities where they could turn their backs on their fellow citizens, or they can sort of take action and choose to help, right? To so help them, yep. The mobster's stuck under a car because the car's rolled back on him. The homeless dying man, right? He just wants...
How about the horrible scene where the kids go out and just decide to beat up the homeless people that's for kicks?
And, that's right, yeah. But he, and again... Who would blame him if someone walked away from that? But each time they have these situations and they just keep coming through with their humanity and with their grace.
And how about the evolution of Jin, who starts out, his story is he says he was, you know, champion bike racer,
yeah,
and, you know, decided to throw a race and fell in bad with the mobster. And then slowly over time, we learn that he wasn't a racer, and well, then he had a gambling problem.
And you raise a really good point, and something that let's go there for a second, yeah. Right? And I think all three of them, as friends, right? I mean, they have formed this family. I think all three of them have lied to themselves and lied to those other people around them, right? About why they're in the situation they are, right?
You're right.
Yeah. Like Jin tells his story about falling in, and Mayuki. She won't really tell what happened. She just keeps saying she's done something that's irreversible. Hana doesn't really talk about why she's in the situation she's in, but they do kind of tell them a story about how it was somebody else's fault, right? And as the story evolves, we find out that really why they're there is different than what they've been telling each other.
Yeah, and this Mayuki's interesting because she's the innocent and she's young and she's like, why are you homeless? You know, you can't figure that out. And you kind of, unfortunately, with Hana, you fill it in, you think it's just because she's transgender that she's homeless. And that's not really the case.
That's right.
I mean, she has people that love her and cared for her.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot of times you see is that there is, they don't feel like they have a chance at redemption, right? For those who were in their lives earlier on where things maybe didn't go the way they wanted them to. They don't feel like they can go back, right? We find out through the movie that Jin does have a daughter, right? He told everybody that he had a daughter who was dying, and that he threw a bike race, right, to raise money to pay her medical bills, only to find out, ironically, she is alive and well and is a nurse at a hospital. So, and also there's a great scene. I'll get back to the sequence, but there's a great scene where Hana is very angry at Jin about, you lied to me. Your daughter's right here. Yeah. And I felt so bad about the medical bills and all the things you did, but you know, you lied. So she's mad at him as friends that you didn't trust me enough to tell me why you're really in the situation you're in.
You know, there's another factor I hadn't considered until you kind of pointed it out. I recognize that they felt there wasn't redemption for them. And in this instance, these people, you think that they're down on their luck, terrible homeless people, and they're the ones that have all the humanity. You're right. I mean, they are doing, they're saving people, they're protecting people, they're doing all of the right things.
Yep. And so back to, so they're out on their own, they're kind of tracking through the city of Tokyo, but quickly through the movie, they discover, so who is this happy couple, right? They go to the neighborhood, they find this building is run down, but they know that's where the picture was. And so they start asking the neighbors. And they soon discover, right, that Shahiko and her husband used to live there. And Shahiko and her husband lived there. They were happy. The gossipy neighbors saying and telling about what a terrible gambling habit the husband had and how he ruined everything and how he was also an alcoholic and that, you know, the house was ruined because of him, and they don't know where they went, but they now have an identity. And so through the course of some other interactions, they find and they track down Shiko, Hana, and Maiko. Go up to her, they confront her. Hana's mad, like, how could you have abandoned this baby? What are you doing? You know, this is a horrible thing you've done. And Maiko breaks down and says, you know, you're right. I did abandon the baby. It was the wrong thing to do. You know, please forgive me. And of course, sort of there's the softening of the hearts. And Hana hands the baby to Shahiko. And Shahiko goes off nurturing the baby. And Hana and Maiko, they're happy. Like, look what we've done.
Happy ending, Mark? Yeah. Happy ending?
No. So meanwhile, right, Jin, again, like he's evolving. Like I like how you said that, but he's evolving, right? So he made some bad decisions in his life. And so Shahiko's husband, which we never know what his name is in the movie, we just know that it's her husband. He tracks him down and confronts him and said, what are you doing? Like, how could you abandon your wife? You've ruined yourself. I know I've ruined myself. Your gambling, your alcoholism, you know, you need to be accountable. You need to take the steps now and, you know, find your wife, find your baby, you know, and make things right. And all of a sudden the husband looks at him and says, we don't have a baby. And so Jin's like, what do you mean? They're out there looking for your wife now so they can give your baby back. He's like, our baby died. And so it's like, okay, now what's going to happen, right? And so, you know, Jin goes running back out onto the streets looking for Hana and for Mayuki to say, hey, update, right? Something's happened here. And so we soon discover that Shiko did not have the baby, that their baby did die. There is a baby missing. But then, you know, maybe I don't know if I want to ruin the ending on it, but it's a very action-packed film.
Oh, yep.
You know, I think it's, you know, what's interesting is, you know, this is a story of, like I said, of humanity, of a family coming together, a family, again, how would, you know, oftentimes we define family as blood relatives, you know, maybe, you know, in-laws, et cetera, but in this case, for these three, this is the family, and they've come together. Maybe I'll give a little hint. So there is a happy ending mm-hmm. to this movie. But you know, in the end, the three, friends, right. Come together. They are able to resolve their differences amongst each other. They're also able to resolve sort of what happened. I mentioned Jin, you know, is able to find his daughter and, guess what? She forgives him.
Yeah.
She understands, right, that things happen.
That scene, I was going to say, don't discount the emotional resonance, right?
Yes.
In an animated film.
Oh, no. Yeah.
When him and his daughter sit there and talk, and they're just talking as almost strangers. They don't really know each other. And you know, they're bearing their souls to each. It's moving.
It's very moving, yeah. And Hano, you know, we discover along the way too that, you know, she had a lover. You know, it's interesting. There's things, think about, again, got to go back to 2003, remember what was going on in the world and time. But, you know, I think it's suggested, and actually I think her mother, who she now reconciles with, asks Hana about her lover, Ken. Mm-hmm. Like, did Ken die of AIDS? And there's sort of this silence and looking. He's like, no, he fell in the shower. But I still think in that moment, I wasn't sure still if Hana was telling the truth or not, right? And so, but I think there, like I said, and Mayuki's able to kind of resolve. She finds out along her way that her dad still loves her, wants her back, right? They get an opportunity to reconcile their differences. But
that was the one plot point that, you know, I kind of spoiled too, but her father, who there's fleeting glimpses of through the whole film, they do have a reconciliation at the end, which is beautiful.
It is. And, but it was, yeah, I mean, so it's a very, it's a action packed movie. Again, there's some things at the end that we'll leave up for the viewers to watch so we can pull it all together. But maybe we can get into our four F's if you're ready.
Yeah, I'm ready.
So, first question, Christmas movie?
Now, so I'm going to say in this one, absolutely. I feel it. And even though, I mean, it starts with a Christmas scene and it occurs at Christmas time. But I think that other than the baby, the relation to the starting off with a nativity scene and then an abandoned baby, that's probably the only overarching theme for Christmas. There's not a lot of Christmas decorations. There's not, but I, because of, like you've pointed out, they're a family coming together and defending themselves, but also learning about each other and pulling closer together. It's Christmassy, I tell you.
I'm going to build on that a little bit. I totally agree. We're going to agree on this one. But Bob, do you think that Jin, Hana, and Mayuki, do you think they could have been the three kings?
Oh my goodness. I had never thought about that. Three godfathers, three. Oh, wow.
Something to think about.
Well, it is, especially like you said, the movie starts out that for some way these, and I think because it's at a church, that must be, mm-hmm. these three homeless people end up there watching a nativity play. And it is actually, if I recall the scene, it's when the kings are bringing the gifts to the baby. So, Mark, you're onto something there.
We'll see. But we agree it's Christmas. Yeah. What about feeling? What'd you feel?
It has all, you know, I like a few of the films that we've had in terms of they have some action, they have some drama, they have some humor. This has all of it. And, you know, the one thing is probably got away with it being in animation. They probably could do more like the gangster fighting and all the, you know what I mean? Like there's it was kind of maybe over the top in some ways, but it's handled very, very well.
I agree. You know, I think there's the feelings I came away with, I already talked about, was the selflessness, right? The sacrifice they're each making, the encouragement. Because even when they think the baby belongs to that woman, right there, even though they're mad at it first, they're encouraging. So I just think there's a lot of positive, great Christmas spirit that's occurring there.
Yeah, it's conflicting emotions.
It is.
How could you? But you're also the mom, and this is your child, and we want to bring it back to you. You know, it covers the gamut.
There. It does. What about Future?
You know, it's a kind of an emotional roller coaster. You go through a lot. So I enjoy watching it, and I will, but I don't think it's something I can watch real often, only because it just, it's a lot.
It is a lot. Well, here's something to think about. As I was researching and watching this movie, there is actually a trilogy of the Tokyo Godfathers.
No way.
Seriously? There is. There is. And so after this was the first one, there's two more films that come later that are the continued adventures of Jin and Hana and Mayuki. And so, I don't know if I'll watch this one again, but I'm intrigued now to see what happens, right? Because
I liked all the characters. Yeah. I liked all of them.
Yeah. Like you said before, you really can get good character development in an anime. And so, again, I don't think if I'll watch this again, but I am intrigued to go and watch this. The other thing too, I found is that in 2020, during the pandemic, this film was re-released as sort of a kind of old style classic, time to release it. And it got rave reviews all over the world.
Seriously, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It is. Because this moves into the next one, Fan.
Yep.
And the problem I have right now is, would I recommend it to someone? I absolutely would. But now you have this whole, but there's this, you know, transgender person, and are people going to be offended by it? Because honestly, he is an endearing character. You know what I mean? And you have no issues with it. But I hate that I have to think about that, you know?
True. Yeah. I would give, if I was recommending this, I think I would. I just would tell them, hey, you want a movie at the end you're going to feel good about, and it's in you're comfortable with the anime genre. And then there's, you know, depending on who it is, I may or may not share sort of who the different roles and different people are, because I think entering into it, just having a little bit of background, seeing the characters develop for who they are kind of makes the movie special. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, now you left me with, I'm just stunned sitting here going, Three Kings. Wow. How did I miss that? That's awesome.
Every once in a while. Wow. So, again, it's funny, in the movie, they never actually wish each other a Merry Christmas, but I maybe teach you how to say Merry Christmas in Japanese.
Please do.
Merry Kusama.
Merry Kusama.
Merry Kusama.
Merry Kusama.
But let's talk about some other traditions in Japan. So Christmas isn't a traditional holiday, right? I mean, growing up, and you know, it's been traditionally a Buddhist and Shinto nation. I think, however, you know, post World War II, there was a lot of I don't know if it's Americanization, but certainly more Americans who have gone to Japan and lived there. But Christmas again is very similar to some of the things we saw in other episodes. Christmas is the time for friends and couples to have parties, make plans to meet up for dinner, and celebrate together. So similar to Korea, Christmas Eve is the most romantic day of the year, like Valentine's Day. You know, and there's something kind of cool about that, for us who have children, have grown children, and just how much we focused on them during Christmas. I mean, it's kind of neat to...
So we can pledge. We're going to go to our wives and go, this year, it's all about the lovers.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I'll make reservations when we leave. Also, Christmas lights or illumination, as it's called in the U.S., right? It's a huge attraction during the festive season. Nobody does it better, of course, than the Japanese. They always seem to be 5 years in front of the U.S. when it comes to creativity. But it comes together with expressions of festive joy, right? The entire country goes crazy. Shopping malls and museums. They go over the top. The aqua, this is my favorite thing. The Aqua Toto Gifu Aquarium in Japan. Guess what they use to light up a Christmas tree?
Okay, it's an aquarium. A fish?
Very close. I'll give you a good C+ on that. Electric eel.
Oh, gosh. So, I don't know.
So I have to, I tried to find a video of that, although video doesn't work well on the podcast. But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting, right? That they
sound like my eel is sushi. So I probably would not be good.
Probably not. Also, this is my favorite thing that I found out. What do you think is like the top meal in Japan during Christmas?
Okay. I have to tell you that I've heard this one before and I know it. I know it's Kentucky Fried Chicken. Love that.
It is.
In fact, Mark, I have to tell you, I asked someone I used to work with who was traveling to Japan. He brought me back a bobblehead Colonel Sanders, an Asian Colonel Sanders.
That's outstanding. I mean, for our listeners, right, eating Christmas dinner of Kentucky Fried Chicken is so popular that pickup lines form 2 hours ahead of time.
Oh my gosh.
And I think the Domino's in Japan also has a special caribou based delivery program. Well, they started to have this great idea where they were going to, during the Christmas season, use caribous
in Japan
to deliver the pizza.
Compete against Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, right? My gosh.
Hey, look at this. You know, order pizza, we'll deliver it via caribou.
I'm sure that went over really well.
Well, it didn't. It didn't, because the reindeers continually shook their antlers, refused to stop at delivery spots, and, you know, kept dislodging the pizzas from the delivery pouches. So I love the concept, right? You know,
yes.
We'll beat you, Colonel Sanders. We're going to get reindeer and we're going to deliver our pizzas. But it was only about a 2-week stunt that sort of went backwards. And I can't imagine the cleanup was very good behind them.
Mark, until you told me about that, I was thinking, oh, okay, let's try to adopt the Kentucky Fried Chicken thing here in the States. But I'm like, no, let's deliver Domino pizza with caribou.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, who thinks of that, right? I mean, part of me thinks whoever thought of that, that marketing person, did they get fired or a bonus? Because certainly everybody talked about Domino's, right?
Sure. Yeah.
But they eventually were replaced with scooters. So an easier way to do it. So, but yeah, but let's maybe talk about music.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
So the song we have tonight is called Christmas Eve. It's by Tasoro Yamashita.
Let's get up and move around. Shake our tail feather.
Silent.
Think
I'm crying.
I mean you hear some English words in there, but you know, the song when it was originally released, right, is a very classic and popular Japanese Christmas song. It really didn't do all that well initially, and so, you know, it was released, people sort of liked it, didn't like it, but it wasn't really well known. But 6 years later, it jumped to number one, and it wasn't because caribou were singing it or on the back of their antlers. That was because the Japanese railway system began to use the song in the TV commercials.
Ah.
So let me set the scene, right? And you're going to cry. Get a tissue. The song's about lovers unable to meet on Christmas Eve, and the song lyrics reflect the Japanese emphasis that this is occurring during Christmas Eve, again, the night of romance, mm-hmm. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. So the protagonist is waiting in the street for his love to arrive, but knowing in his heart of hearts that she's never going to come. So he's there and he's lonely and nothing's going to happen. But sure enough, all of a sudden she does show up. And so the song has been endlessly remixed, covered, rearranged, and sung by countless other singers and bands as a tribute. since it was originally released in 1983. So nothing like a remake of a commercial. it's really funny, right? Sometimes there's people will hear songs. I know it's happened to me where I'll hear a song and I'm like on a commercial, I'm like, wow, who's that artist? I don't know that song. I go out, I find that artist. The next thing you know, I'm listening to that artist. Yes, so yeah. Happens all the time.
And this is, I think, the first one where there was some English in there. Yeah, they dropped in some English words, which
is interesting. I heard Holy Night, Saturday Night.
Yeah.
I think I caught a Coca-Cola in there too, but maybe not.
Godzilla? No.
So, Bob, as we wind down this one, you know, working together, I've been sort of paying attention and reflecting on foreign customs, right? I mean, we talked a little bit about in our last show, you know, maybe what we do for traditions, but I'm just curious. I have a good friend who incorporates from his heritage wassailing. I don't know if you ever heard of wassailing.
No,
in his culture, every Christmas Eve, the family joins hands together. And he shared with me that at during the height when his mom and dad are alive and all brothers and sisters and cousins, that they would have so many people that they'd actually hold hands and go around their whole house.
Oh, my God!
And they would sing a specific wassailing song. And I just think that's just incredibly special. I'm just wondering, like, do you have any friends or acquaintances that you've seen or you have witnessed sort of a tradition that maybe was brought over from their country of origin?
You know, no, but I'm thinking about that. And I'm like, to your point, you've started to pay more attention and I'm going to do that. Just what people do. Now, I know people who are of Serbian origin and Greek. And so their Christmases are later. They're like January 6th or I'm not sure when Greek Christmas is. But so the joke there is, hey, they get to get all the deals, the after Christmas deals and buy everything. So that's not really a tradition incorporated into. But Mark, that's I love that story of them holding hands and going through the house. And I'm going to pay attention. If I find one, I will let you know.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we can come back to it any time. So great. You know, we're winding here. I mean, I'd like to leave you with a thought as well, Bob. And I chose a quote tonight from, a famous, famous philosopher. I don't know if you ever heard him, Tupac Shakur.
Yeah, of course. Yes.
but I love this. It says, Christmas to me is as many people as possible are happy.
Mark, that should be on our t-shirts right now. Don't you think?
I
by
love
Tupac.
It. By Tupac, right? I mean,
as many people as possible happy. I love it.
So
I love
inspiration comes from all different folks.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Bob. And again, for those, if you are listening and you have songs or you have suggestions and movies, you know, please email us at festivefans@aol.com.
Oh, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. You got to say it a little faster. Merry Christmas.
Actually, we're done.
Done.
It's over. Over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over. It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.